He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And we'll start out with just a brief discussion about the Jeep brand, because I have been noticing the major difference between the Jeep Wranglers as they've evolved to the current generation. And the biggest thing that marks the difference between the older Jeep Wranglers and the current ones is the width of the wheelbase. And it has continuously evolved into a wider stance as we've gotten to the current generation. And one says, because of the narrowness of the older generation, does that make the Jeep Wrangler current model less off-road capable than the older models? And I will go out, because I don't think Jay has much to comment on here, but we'll find out in a minute, that the older generations with the narrower wheelbases, for those people who go Rubicon driving and really do the off-road stuff that's done out west with Jeep Wranglers, is probably a bit more able to do the narrower parts of those trails than the new ones are. The new ones, being wider, are basically, I know Jay's waiting, is basically probably more of a safety issue because of the tippiness of the old narrow wheelbase ones opposed to the safety requirements of the newer models of vehicles of all brands, not just Jeep Wranglers that are on the road today.
Well, vehicles have been getting wider every year.
Wider and squatter.
Wider and, I don't know about squatter.
Not for the Wranglers being squatter.
What about the Evoque? Never mind. I'm just at the Range Rover. It's just like,
what is that? Oh, yeah, so that's a Range Rover. Yes, we were on Wranglers. We can get to the Evoque in a minute.
No, I'm simply talking about the squatter. But
we're talking about windows and those.
The squish.
The squish. That's on there.
Mercifully, the Wranglers have maintained the big, boxy, square look.
Right.
Okay? Get back to the Wrangler. There's good news for old Wrangler-style drivers, and not so good news for FCA. As Mahindra tries to enter that market with an old style look,
with narrow wheelbase and all the old features of the narrow Wranglers,
and an ongoing lawsuit with FCA on the grill work,
of slots in the grill, and that also happened between Hummer and FCA years ago, and FCA won a court battle over the design of the front grille of the Hummer versus the Wrangler because of the similar type of situation with the number of slots.
Believe it or not, Jeep is adamant that the 7 slots is a Jeep thing.
And you can see a Jeep and define a Jeep from a distance if you can count the number of slots, whatever, from the distance that you try to figure it out whether it was a Hummer, a Mahindra, or anything else.
Okay. Obviously, people are trying to distract from the issue at large.
Well, it brings us, the competition to the Wrangler is about to come out, and Robin and I were just talking about it just seconds ago. The new Ford Bronco is coming out this
There's
spring.
A great picture of it on Car and Driver, is it, Jay?
There's a bunch of magazines that have it.
Yeah, but there's a Bronco website that's been trying to show pictures, and they've been showing road racing versions of them, which have been somewhat obscured. And I didn't see anything that looked really like what I was hoping to see until I saw the picture on the last issue of Car and Driver. But I'm not sure I hope it's going to be what it looked like on Car and Driver, but Motor Trend hadn't shown it that clearly. And I don't think any of the other mags and periodicals have shown it that clearly before that one came out.
But let me just ask you, if it looks like you hope it looks.
Yeah.
And if it is, shall we say, a throwback.
Yeah. It is a throwback.
And
it is a throwback, which is great.
But there are certain things in life that, certain throwbacks that, never should have been
changed in the first place. I agree.
So I'm just asking,
I want to hear the question here from Jill.
If it turns out to be one of those... not a reimagining, but your Bronco.
What is the question?
The question is, will you get one?
That's what I asked
Jay asked me that minutes ago
because
before we started broadcasting the show, and I said, no, I've outgrown it. But probably I've outgrown it financially as opposed to maybe outgrown
maybe it emotionally. Okay, I just wondered. Okay? Yeah, what were you going to ask?
Well,
because that seems like the obvious question. If Robin stops talking about his Jeep and goes out and gets a Bronco,
well, that would be good news.
Oh, wouldn't it?
But here's the thing with the Bronco. It is like the Jeep. Ford has seen the Jeep brand just take that niche, that segment of the market of, all-wheel drive, off-terrain.
They left it lying there.
It's
not as though.
But so the Bronco is a real body-on-frame design, so it's going to ride like a truck.
It's going to have Dana axles
like
Wranglers do.
But, you know, Jeep sells a lot of Wranglers, so Ford says, hey, I want a piece of that pie too. And I think they will get a decent chunk of the pie.
Well, they will, because the Bronco has a historical emotional significance, and there are a lot of people out there who are in the new generations who remember the old Broncos, which, as I've said on a few shows over the past several years, were my first two vehicles that I ever owned.
Because you flipped one of them.
One was a 69. No, that's not because I flipped one of them. It was a 69, which was the initial year that it came out, with a six-cylinder, and then I upgraded to the V8, which came only with an automatic, and I did flip that one. I did a 360-degree roll on a major state road in New Milford, and landed right side up going the opposite way, and had the fan blades not gone into the radiator and broken radiator. I probably could have driven it home with a squished windshield, no front glass, no driver's side door glass, but I was intact because I was in my seatbelt, and I distinctly remember being upside down during the roll, and I don't really remember being on the side doors of the vehicle until I was right side up. And it was, you know, the roof, which I don't think was really a roll bar roof, suffered some compression, but it did not collapse onto my head or whatever. And I came away relatively unscathed, except for the experience of doing such a maneuver, which was entirely unpredictable.
Very Evel Knievel.
But it was a great vehicle, and I loved it, and I did a lot of off-roading.
Which is why you should go get a new one. And may I add, the doors are going to be removable. They
just like the Wrangler.
Yep, but it'll be a lot easier than on the Wrangler.
Well, they've improved.
You will need no tools to take the doors off, and you'll be able to stow them in the trunk.
The roof also will come off like the Wrangler. I'm not sure the windshield will fold
the
Wrangler's windshield, but I don't know how many people really want to fold a windshield.
Yeah,
because the windshield is quite
well. Windshield saves as a safety,
and your eyes if you're going down the road and all that kind of thing.
But
it will sell a lot, which is what we started out saying about it.
It'll sell in reasonable numbers, but Ford is already. This is where I shake my head. Is Ford is already trying to capitalize on the Bronco name, and they've already announced a Bronco Sport, which will not at all be a Bronco, which will be they'll do exactly what Jeep has done with the Cherokee and all the variations of the little Jeeps, and which I think dilutes the brand. They are going to base that Bronco Sport on the new Ford Escape, and it's just going to be a smaller
version of the
Bronco.
It'll probably be like the Compass or the Renegade.
The RAV4?
No. It'll do, marketing-wise, it'll do what Jeep has done with the... What are all those little things?
The Compass is one, and the one that's built in Italy is the other one. Is that the Renegade?
The Renegade.
Who are those? I'm just trying to figure out who those are for, since we're doing identity.
There will be cheaper versions cost-wise, and they will be actually the Renegade, which is built in Italy off a Fiat-based platform, is a remarkably off-road worthy vehicle. If you look at the road clearance, if you were to follow these vehicles down the road and try to measure road clearances above the wheels, the Renegade is probably, and it's got a short wheelbase, is probably a very off-road capable vehicle, because the short wheelbase allows higher angles of departure and approach when you're approaching rocky trails with rocks in them. Then the Cherokee, and not a whole lot more than the Wrangler, but maybe a bit more, who knows, in the major off-road version of these vehicles.
Because something that I've always wondered, and this again goes back a good amount of time, as they luxurized, my word, the Grand Cherokee ultimately, is when you're paying that much money for your again, Grand Cherokee, Land Rover, whatever.
You don't take it off-road.
You don't take it off-road.
No. And that's good. That's what the Broncos and the Wranglers are all about, right, or will be all about.
Because you just don't.
You know, you've got RAV4s. You've got a whole bunch of Cherokee, not the Grand Cherokee, Cherokee size compacts. You got the Audi Q5s. You've got Mercedes versions.
Nobody's taking their Q5 off-road. Right?
Nobody goes off-road in those. However, I have been off-road in my stripped version Cherokee, and I keep thinking, would I be doing this if I were driving a Q5 or even a RAV4?
No.
Probably not.
That's what makes you so interesting.
Robin does this with his sedans, by the way. So that's not a good example of what to do and not to do with a vehicle.
I've always thought that what Robin does with his cars is great because some of that is driver
knowledge and knowing what you think you can do with your vehicles until you get stuck and realize you shouldn't have done it.
Your career as a car tester is, you know, checkered, let's just say.
Thank you. We'll go with that. Now, Jay's been preparing for quite a show, I think, so I think we're going to roll into that after we finished our Cherokee.
Ouch. I wanted to talk a little bit about us who are race car racing fans.
Oh, the IMSA race.
There was the IMSA race, the 24-hour race at Daytona.
I have one
question Rolex 24.
For you before you continue. Did the Corvette finish or not?
Yes, at least one of the Corvettes finished.
Yeah, but one was not the newest one. One, the C8 was the yellow one.
The other one was a C8 as well.
Oh, was it?
It just painted differently.
I didn't watch the whole race, and I watched the finish, but I couldn't find – they were so busy talking about the number one vehicles in each of the things that none of the Corvettes showed up. And I was hoping to see the Corvette still flying around the track at the finish yesterday afternoon. And I did not see any camera work arrive to show where the Corvettes finished.
Well, if you had paid $3 to get NBC streaming live, you would have seen the whole race from every cockpit you
wanted. I wasn't
going
to stay up overnight.
I didn't either.
And I have to just say this. This whole paying for this is comical because – I don't know, the Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor, it's something like some sort of wrestling, not wrestling, a fight, and I can't remember the correct initials, was a knock, you know, it was basically $96 to stream, and it lasted 8 seconds. So there, there's...
The $3 for NBC Live was actually worth it. I didn't do it, but I was at a mutual friend of ours.
Yes, who did.
And who watched probably a good chunk of the race. I watched probably an hour and a half of it.
Yeah, and I watched the start, the hour and a half or whatever
the
start
you can have it on
and
the
2 hour finish.
Not notice.
So for the neophytes out there, the Rolex 24 is in its 58th. That was a 58th edition. So this has been going on for a while. It is on Daytona's famous track, which is more and better known for the
Daytona 500.
The Daytona 500. This is a road course version of the track, so it not only uses the tri-oval, but uses a whole paved, of course, infield course. So it's an interesting track. The cars run the track in about a minute and a half and minute
and 40
track? Seconds. Yeah.
Including the infield.
Yeah. And there are different classes in the IMSA field, and the first
was four in this one, correct?
Yes, what they call the DPIs, the prototypes, are purpose-built racing chassis that are the epitome of sports car racing. And but what is interesting is that in each one of the classes, the top three finishers were all in the same lap. Or within the lap. Now think about it. Being in the same lap after 24 hours of racing
is extraordinary.
It's extraordinary. And 20 or 30 years ago, it was unheard of. You'd go to big endurance races, and the winners were either four laps ahead, and 20, you know, half the field did not finish the race. And my whole point with this is, race cars have become way, way, way more reliable, and street cars have become also way more reliable than they were even 10 or 20 years ago. So I think, you know, we see it in racing. It's very tight racing. It's great entertainment. The drivers have become, I think, even greater athletes than they used to be. I think keeping their concentration and driving at that level of speed for hours at a time.
Well, aren't there four drivers or something?
Yes, and in the old days they used to have only two drivers, and we thought, and until recently my thought was, drivers are wimps now. You need four drivers; they can't even share the duties. Drive 12 hours over 24 hours. I think the driving 20 years ago was at a much slower pace. You had to manage a car because it was a lot less reliable. Now the cars are bulletproof, and they run them at 10 tenths for 24 hours.
That's why I asked you whether the Corvette finished, because that was one of the discussions at the beginning of the race.
And I saw comments of people being disappointed because the Corvette finished fourth. Well, it finished, less than a lap down from the top three finishers its very first race.
Yeah. And it's sort of like the Ford GT's first race, in which it won, right? When it debuted last century? Or was it this century?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
I just think it's very interesting. You can immediately separate from certain comments and directions that discussions go. Who knows what they're talking about and who doesn't?
Who doesn't, right. I don't.
No, it's simply because if you are fourth by a relative whisker, yes, there's a gradation, but that doesn't speak to
the designs are something that I don't know much about, except that the ones that were really outstanding or stood out was the Lamborghinis and the Corvettes. The BMWs won their division, 1, 2, and 3? But I didn't know it was a BMW until I had cameras.
The two Porsches were second and third.
Oh, okay. But BMW won, and I couldn't tell the BMW when going around the track, but I could see it when the camera focused on it at the end. Whereas I could tell the Corvettes when they were going around the track, and I could tell the Lamborghinis. And what was the other one that David's friend was driving, was a driver in? That wasn't the Lamborghini.
Yes, he was driving a Lamborghini. Okay. Yeah.
I kept looking for his name, and I didn't see it.
Spencer,
yeah. Correct.
He was driving the Lamborghini.
Did that finish?
Yeah, second place.
Second place. Yep. So kudos to him as one of the four drivers.
To
the team.
The good news is we can see all of these cars right here at Lime Rock sometime this summer.
They will be here.
Look up the schedule. Except for the DPIs, they still don't come to Lime Rock, and part of the problem, and I'm going to try not to open the can of worms, is that it is very hard to have a professional series run all of their races on a two-day
split,
weekend versus
split
a three-day
day
weekend.
Situation. Yeah. What you're talking about, Sunday racing, is what he's
It's
cost of operations.
Lime Rock is a relatively small track.
It's narrow.
It's hard to put all of the classes in one race. So typically when IMSA has come with the prototypes, for instance, they have run the prototypes separately from the other classes,
so
just because you cannot put 40 or 50 cars on a 1.5.
And you also, it's a narrow track compared to Daytona, for example, to try to pass with these cars that are fairly wide as well as fast.
And
can't really do it very easily on the Lime Rock track.
And my curiosity is, and this is in other forms, like in horse racing, for example, you have different races. You might have a big race, but you do have an undercard, so to speak.
Yeah.
That are equally.
Well, and they have that.
And so I'm wondering.
IMSA has that too, so they have several.
So do the different classes
races
go
yeah.
on? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's hard to bring every. I mean, even here at the Daytona 24, there was a big race, a GT4 race on the Friday.
Right.
So there is a multi-hour, like a 2 or 3 hour endurance race on Friday before the 24, with different cars, similar cars, but not quite as fast. So it's a big weekend. It's a big event.
Fun to watch for those who went for the whole thing.
A lot of fun to watch.
And I was very happy watching the start and watching
there's the marketing thing too, and the benefit of motorsports in for car manufacturers. As much as, and I know the owner of the team is a good friend of mine who won the overall race in the prototypes. It's branded as Cadillac. I still have a problem associating Cadillac with racing, and that's an ongoing thing that I personally feel that GM is just shooting themselves in the foot.
But they've been
to
do something.
Ford
the
does
Cadillac
the same
brand.
Thing, and they yeah. just don't. The branding is not relevant in my mind. I keep saying Corvette should be for Corvette to be racing is a smart thing for GM to do. Ford racing Mustangs is a smart thing to do.
So you want the name of the car?
Well, I think I think
a certain brand we associate is appropriate with racing. Right. Cadillac is not, I think, is Jay, what Jay is saying. But they're doing it because
They're trying to catch.
They're trying to make sports, Cadillac more of an interesting brand,
luxury sports brand.
Get people's names out there so that people know.
Jay, next on your list. Yeah, cross that one off. Good.
Or do you want to do safety tips?
No.
Okay.
What do you mean, no?
Yes, well, we got 5 minutes. You can get safety tips in a minute or two. Well, and you have something else on that massive list that you've got there?
Well, we can talk about safety too. I mean, it's always the same thing. I mean,
it is always the same thing.
No, well, yes and no. I mean, okay. it's about the most important thing out there. I was reading an article, several articles on autonomous vehicles, and the fact that it is a learning curve, and the accidents we've seen so far are largely due to the fact that people are overconfident in the system, and when they have these systems aboard, they tend to not pay attention to the road.
And the systems break down when the programs are lacking the particular situation. It mostly causes those particular events.
But it's a learning curve. Learn it. It's a learning curve for the industry. Long-term, what are the benefits of autonomous vehicles? I still think that the primary benefit is on congested highways at low speed. I mean, that is, to me, the primary benefit. People who spend an hour or two in their cars commuting to and from work, it's a big benefit. But the safety aspect of it, from a driver's standpoint, is you need to learn what the car can do and what it cannot do, what the systems can do and what they cannot do. And I keep saying this over and over again, but we keep getting in cars that we don't know anything about. We don't know how they function. We don't know how to turn the radio on. And these are all things we need to do before we hit the road.
Okay. I want the audience should know that out in the West and maybe down the South and spreading around the country slowly but surely are autonomous commercial little package delivery vehicles that are running roaming streets of urbanized centers, delivering packages from Amazon and others, I guess, with, I don't think, any drivers in them. And I don't know how the public is doing. We won't see them around our neck of the woods.
I don't think
they'll find out whether
I may have some test markets, but I don't think Amazon is delivering with driverless vehicles yet.
Well, somebody's delivering with it because they're on the road, and whether it's UPS, whether it's Amazon, whether it's whatever.
Is it being tested or is it?
No, they're actually delivering packages to people, and they're small vehicles. They're not SUVs and all that. Now, I don't know whether they're go-kart size, but they're boxy.
You said golf cart.
And they periodically show up on news broadcasts. And
typically when they run into a mailbox or something?
I haven't seen any event with them yet that they've been run into from the rear or whatever by people. I suspect they do assiduously adhere to the speed limits. So there are probably people that would like to go by them, and I don't know how you go by them on the streets where they're operating. But I was going to say something else along the safety lines. I've had the occasion now to drive a vehicle equipped with the side blind spot passing thing, which I had not done. So I know Jay is driving several vehicles with the blind spot passing warnings that show up in your side view mirrors, and sometimes with or without a safety tone. And I find them to be very... A great feature, especially when you're driving on the multi-lane roads that we have around here, going to New York or about Boston or whatever.
It's the biggest safety feature to get.
It is
easy to get used to.
It is,
and once you get used to it, and you drive a vehicle without the safety feature,
you feel like you're blind at a certain level.
It's sort of about time, no?
Well, I nearly ran off somebody over. You know, ran somebody off the road trying to go back into a right lane in one of my vehicles, which did not have it. For that exact reason, that I like it very much, and I think it's the easiest safety part to get used to.
Can I just, I'm going to throw this out at the very end of the show. There does seem to be a bunch of people, this happened three times last week, who passed, you know, they're in a huge hurry to get to basically a, in a small town, a sign that says 35 miles an hour. And I am astounded at the number of times that people pass to get, like there's no sense of what's in front
of you. I am also astounded to help finish this by the number of people who speed up as they're approaching a stop sign.
It's unbelievable.
Speed up as they're approaching a four-way stop sign, and then they have to put the brakes on hard.
Not understanding whether
America's in a hurry all the time.
I'm going to let this one go.
Okay, very good.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.